Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to actor, comedian, TV presenter, and podcaster, the multi-talented Deirdre O'Kane.
Every time I write a show, I think I don't have another one in me. I swear to God, it takes so much to write 80 minutes of material. Like, it's just epic. And even now, I go on the stage and I love this show. I think it's the best one I've written.
Okay.
I think I've gotten better as a comic. That's one of the great beauties of getting older. You don't get worse. You don't get worse as an actor. You get better. You don't get worse as a comic. You get better. You get better at all of it. You get better at presenting. You get better at talking. So that's a great plus.
Yeah.
The only thing that doesn't get better is your face. Your face starts to fall into the sea. But what can you do? Throw a bit of money at it and hope for the best. You know, which is what I'm doing.
Deirdre lives in Dunleary in Dublin with her husband, writer and director Stephen Bradley, and their teenage kids, Holly, who's 17, and Daniel, who's 13. She describes herself as an optimist who is at times competitive and self-critical. And in this conversation, we talk about motherhood, menopause, her fascinating career, the story behind the making of the film Noble, and the contentment she feels at this stage of her life. And I start our chat by asking her about a recent trip to New York.
I took herself, Miss 17-year-old, to New York for her birthday.
Just the two of you. Lovely.
Birthday. Just the two of us. It was absolutely delightful after 2 years of nothing.
Yeah.
The sight of busy, happening New York, honest to God, it was just so uplifting. And to see it, I felt like I was seeing it for the first time because I was seeing it through her eyes, and she was just so excited. I mean, just going to Broadway to see shows and just the buzz of the place. It was electric.
Yeah.
And we got beautiful weather. So listen, you know, what can I tell you? It was glorious.
And it sounds like you get on very well. Because that's a tricky age for the, I would imagine, for the daughter-mother relationship.
Yeah, 17. Yeah, we do. We're very tight. I mean, you know, she has her moments of, you're annoying me.
Yeah.
And I've just, there's a lot of work in keeping shtum and saying nothing. But that is the only way to do it. To sometimes just go, take a breath, turn around, say absolutely nothing. And it passes very quick. It's fine.
So you're good at that. Now, that's a skill.
I've learned. And I'm eternally learning.
Yeah.
As you are, as a parent, who could have believed the work that would be involved in being a parent. It shocks me. Every day it shocks me. Yeah. Every day from the day they were born, I am shocked by what I need to learn next and what I don't know. Because you think you're getting places and you're not.
And then there's something else. I suppose, yeah, all the different phases. But sure, I'm only at the beginning of it. So you are the all-knowing.
Well, you're a little bit ahead, because you've got what, 4 and then a newborn. So
then,
you're dealing with 2 different stages. You're a toddler and baby, and they're kind of different, aren't they?
Yeah. What kind of parent are you? What kind of mom are you? What would you describe yourself as?
I don't know the answer to that. I like to think that I'm fair and that they will come to me. That's kind of really what I want.
Is that the reality?
I think it is the reality, yeah.
Great.
I think they would come to me. I think that's actually all I only care about. If I achieve that, I'll be happy enough. Do you know what I mean? That if their things are going wrong, if anything is going on in their lives, that they will tell me, that they will come to me. And it's not a small thing to achieve either, because it's very easy when you hit the teenage stage, it's very easy to part company. It's very easy to for that to not work. I understand it when I see it with other people. I don't judge it. I understand it very well. I'm very glad that we are close and that they're happy to hang out with us, and that she's happy to come to New York with me. She wasn't going
you're clearly doing a brilliant job.
And I'm better at this stage. I'm better with this older little people than I was with babies. Yeah. I wasn't great. I got to the point where I thought, if I have to push another swing in a park, I'll lose my mind.
Yeah.
I was terrible at that. Terrible. Shocking.
Was it because of it was relentless?
It was very, very boring. And it's very... very thankless. Jesus wept. You put in a certain number of hours and then you think you've done great, and it's not over. There's another 5 hours to go before bedtime, and I just used to go, okay, I'm done. I need an adult to talk to. I was very shocked. I took more than a year out to do it full time, and I wouldn't do that again in a hurry now. I would highly recommend work.
Yes.
Working parenting is much easier. Much, much easier, I think. Mm,
there you go.
And unless it's your vocation.
Yes, correct.
It is some women's vocation.
Yeah, but sure.
I would say that they're a minority. I can't speak for everyone, but.
You did take a complete break from stand-up when they were really young.
But it was just my instinct. I just couldn't do it. I'm not entirely sure that I can articulate why. I could put it down to probably a couple of things. They were little, and maybe my physical instinct was not to go out at nighttime. And while they were babies, I just don't know. I mean, because when Holly was 4 months old, when I just had her, I did write a show and I did go out on the road. But when Dan came along and they were both little, I just didn't have the instinct to do it, Sheila. I'm just not entirely sure what that was about. But I wanted to be an actress as well. So I was very pulled. I was pulled in 2 directions, and it was easier to chase the acting because it demanded less of me.
Yeah, okay.
In a way, stand-up is very demanding in the sense that you have to write it and then perform it and sell it and go on the road. You're doing it all when you're doing stand-up, whereas an actor, somebody else is going to write it, aren't they? And you're going to rock up and hopefully onto a set where somebody else might hold an umbrella over your head and somebody else will put a lunch in front of you. So it's a bit easier.
Yeah.
Plans, of course, they didn't work out. But for some reason, anyway, I just lost my mojo with stand-up.
And do you still feel that pull? Because you are so talented. And if I was to call out all the things you've done, like you have at this stage of your life, and you're probably in a period of really riding high, like you're doing some amazing work, but you have been. I mean, you look at what you've done between telly and film and stand up, between TV presenting, now podcasting. I mean, God, you've really done it all.
I have done it all, but I only see that as a necessity. I just think this is an industry where you won't be working 10 months of the year if you're not doing it all. That, I mean, that's essentially how I see it, you know.
But not everybody can do what you do. Like, how many other people have done the type of work that you've done between acting, between serious roles, comedy, stand-up, the telly presenting? That's, you know, that multi-talented skill base is, I would imagine, quite rare.
Well, do you know what? Look, thank you. I'll take it. Why not just take it, Deirdre?
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you very much. But I also, it's interesting because when I was coming up as an actress, there was a belief that you couldn't do it all, that if you became a presenter, you couldn't then be an actress because people at home would have seen you being you. And how can they then believe you as an actor? And there's an element of truth in that. But those lines have blurred with time because now it's become more and more and more about a brand and how many followers you have online, and which are things that didn't exist when I began.
Sure.
But I remember being extremely worried about being a stand-up. And in fact, I was very, very resistant to it, which is I've walked away from it several times because I still wanted to be an actor and I thought that that it would stop me. I thought that people would not cast me in dramatic roles. And to a point, I'm right. There's a truth to that. But in the end, actually, I probably became more well known through as a stand-up, which did then help me be cast as an actor. So I think in the end, I think I just thought, you know what? There are no rules, really.
Yeah.
It's up to you. It's up to you to just go with where your instinct is taking you and try not to worry about how it's going to impact this, that or the other thing. Just do the feckin' work that's in front of you.
Yeah.
A bit of the bird in the hand kind of a thing.
And right now the work is your show, your tour, Demented.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for mentioning it. I mean, the title came from, you know, being demented, 2 years of nothing and
yeah,
COVID and teenagers and all of us in the house.
And homeschooling?
A bit of that. I didn't last very long now. We're literally talking 3 or 4 months.
All right.
That was the end of that. No, that was a
That's pretty good. 3 or 4 months. That's long.
Yeah, I probably dressed it up. I could probably say 2 or 3 months. I think we might have done two. And then it was just, this is pointless.
Off you go.
Let's just stop.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you're on your own in that. Speaking to a lot of pals of mine who had older kids, they, you know, I think there was a lot that was unsaid by people going, Jesus, this is awful hard.
It just depended on where they were. It was Dan. Dan was in sixth class, so he didn't have an iPad. Holly had an iPad and was going to school. She was going online to school.
So she was grand.
She was self-sufficient. Mm. She didn't need anything. He was just giving out yards and he knows it all and I know nothing. So, you know, what are you going to do with that?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, I was like, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll watch a documentary. We'll watch a movie. Something that is a bit of education and that I might learn something and you might learn something. So we tried a bit of that. That didn't work either. You know, we had a romantic period for everything. And then I just said, here, raise yourself. Raise yourself.
So am I right in thinking from what you've said already about Holly and Dan, is the relationship with Dan the trickier one? Is it just the trickier age? Or is the fact that he's a boy?
That depends on what stage you're at, because sometimes she's the tricky one and sometimes he is. And mercifully, I don't seem to get the two of them being tricky together.
Okay.
Which is marvelous.
Yeah,
because if you can, one, okay, you're wrecking my head and now it's you wrecking my head. Now it's you have solved that and now it's you. So, you know, people who have more than two, God bless them. I don't know how they manage.
No. No, I don't either. Absolutely don't. We're so done. Very happy now and all the rest, but absolutely family.
Happy
is
and grateful and all that. Stop. That's all a given, right?
Yeah. Of course. Exactly. So the show basically is a reflection of what you've gone through, the madness of the pandemic and being stuck at home as we all were.
Well, actually, I talk very little about the stuck at home. I talk more about the fact that I aged 2 years at a time when I couldn't afford to. But I couldn't afford not to be putting my best face forward and to age 2 years, you know, without anybody getting a look at me. so, you know, and that I've become a woman of a certain age. It's more about that and hitting menopause and the hormones and my hormones and her hormones and, you know, both in the same house at the same time. The battle of the hormones, you know, as they leave me and they transfer to her.
Yes.
So it's all of that, actually. My dad also passed away a couple of years ago, and I started writing with him, which was a surprise to me. I didn't think I was going to write about my father, but his voice seemed to be very present in my head, and it was a wonderful thing to do. Very cathartic, and still makes me laugh when I deliver the stuff on stage. It makes me laugh. It's good, you know. I like if people have passed and you're still talking about them, then I suppose it creates a presence, doesn't it?
Yes, you're keeping their spirit alive. Yeah. And were you
even
close?
Though I'm slagging him off and I'm not convinced he'd be entirely happy with
happy,
what I'm
okay.
saying, I do know that he'd be very happy that I'm making money. So he was all about, oh, just make a living, love. Doesn't matter, you know, just whatever it takes. So I know that I'd be forgiven on that basis. So that's fine.
And were they into it? Were they into the fact that you were, you know, very creative, very artistic?
They were into it in the sense that they didn't oppose it,
okay.
You know, but I don't know that they got it particularly. I think they just thought, this one is into the acting. Like, what's that? Do you know, over there somewhere?
Okay, okay.
But I think they enjoyed. They definitely enjoyed when I was hired, you know, when I had work that I was actually paid for. I think they were quite shocked that that was even possible. God almighty, can you actually make a living as an actor? You know, like, is that actually possible? So I think when they thought, you know, but at the same time, God almighty, you know, is it ever enough? You know, you do one job and people think, where's the next one? And where's your Oscar? And where's your BAFTA? And how high are you going to go? You know? But yeah, I think they've enjoyed it.
So he passed away obviously pre-pandemic. So you got to have the, you know, the normal funeral and marking of somebody's life.
Yes,
so,
thank God.
Yeah.
I'm very glad we had that. I really feel for people who haven't had that. That's a terrible sadness on top of a great sadness.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were lucky. Was it a year before? Maybe a full year before, I think, or maybe a bit less. It was August he died.
Okay.
So yeah, he was very sick when I was Dancing with the Stars.
Okay.
I was very glad he got to see that.
Yes.
Because he was really watching a lot of telly. I mean, the telly was such a comfort. My God, would he ever say a bad word about television? When you're not well, it is such a comfort. My father loved sport. He was a big golfer, and he was just able to watch golf and watch sport and put his bets on and enjoy it. You know, it gave him so much pleasure. I remember thinking, what would he do without that telly? It was just such a comfort. And anyway, he got to watch the Dance with the Stars and he loved that. So that meant a lot to me.
And I would imagine it did, because you did brilliant in that. Like, you were in the final show, like, you made it to the last week, which is an unbelievable achievement. You did so well.
Yeah, I don't know how I was.
You were great, that's why. And people loved you. You were really brilliant on it.
Yeah, well, I wrote an entire show about it afterwards.
Did you? Yeah.
I got an hour and 15 minutes of material out of that.
It was worth it.
It was worth it. It was worth it. And I went on the road with that show, which I loved doing as well, for a year. There was just so much in it. Like, it's epic. It's an epic thing to do. It's just so out there. I know people who are listening can't even grasp that, but maybe it's because it's live and because you're doing something that's so far out of your comfort zone that if you are already a professional in that arena, the last thing that you actually want to do is step outside of your comfort zones, do something that you're not good at, even you might be all right at, and present yourself to the nation live. It's high, high risk. It's so high risk. And it would take you very high and then very low and then very high and then very low, which seems to be a theme anyway in my life. I think it's a theme for most people who perform. Jesus, I don't know how we're meant to stay on a level.
Did you change from being part of it? I just feel like it did test a lot of people in so many different ways that maybe they didn't realize they were going to be tested.
God, you know, that's a great question. I'm not sure I know the answer to it. I think I was definitely very far out of my comfort zone. See the making of the VTs. I found them incredibly difficult.
Okay.
Because I guess there's a cheesy element to the show.
Yeah,
you know,
of course
and
there is.
Da, 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 and I think I was very bad at embracing that.
Yeah.
I actually thought Grainne was amazing. I thought she embraced it in the right way. She was very open to, you know what, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to have fun doing this. Whereas I think I have a competitive nature, and I think I, without even knowing, I didn't think it through or anything, but I just think I allowed that to take over. And I'm very self-critical, and I think I was very hard on myself, extremely hard on myself.
Were you?
And I probably would have had more fun if I'd lightened up a little bit.
Okay.
But I don't know. I guess I've just put myself under. I put myself under a lot of pressure. I expected myself to do well. I pushed myself. I would have been disappointed in myself if I hadn't, you know, and it's all crazy in a way because then so much of it is out of your hands. The voting system is kind of mad. I don't know if it even works really, but yeah, do you know what? If anything at all, I probably learned, would you ever relax? It might be time to just stop, to relax a bit. I think that's probably what I have taken from it.
And is that something that you can do? Relax? Or do you struggle with being still?
I'm definitely having a different attitude to this show and this tour. I'm definitely taking each audience. I used to get terribly disappointed if each venue wasn't sold out or if this wasn't. And now I'm going, if there are 80% of the room, people in the room, they have bought a ticket. Just play to the people in the room. Stop looking, finding the negative. Stop expecting it to be all things, you know what I mean? So I am better at going, just be in the moment and do it for these people who are in front of you and be grateful for the fact that they're out, they've got a babysitter, they've bought a ticket, you know. I do think I have learned because it took a lot out of me, and I think I didn't have to. I could have gone with more of the fun.
Okay. I want to kind of go back now to your younger years when you were in boarding school, because I read somewhere that, you know, you became very independent very early on because of that, because you were away from home and you kind of, even though you were in a structured environment, you were away from your mom and dad in your home environment. So it did allow you or forced you to grow up a lot quicker. Looking back on it now, how did it change you, I suppose? How did that experience of going to boarding school shape the person you became?
I think just what you said, it forces you to be independent. It's not a choice. It's not a choice that you're making. You're just... when your parents aren't on hand to solve your problems, then you just have to do it yourself. Work it out in your own head. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, to be honest with you. I think that depends on the child, actually.
Right. Did you all go to boarding school?
We all did. All five of us.
Yeah.
And I have a couple of siblings who really didn't like it and probably shouldn't have been there. Whereas I was a very easy personality. I'm a bit of a chameleon, and I'll fit in. I will find a way to fit in a room. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I can make myself comfortable pretty much anywhere. I'm easy enough in the world. So I think I could just navigate it more easily.
Yeah. Where does that come from?
I'm not sure. I often think we arrive with these personalities. When I look at babies, I think nature, nurture. Now, what am I looking at here?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what amount of nurture I'm going to give this child. She's got this will and this personality that came fully formed. You know, yes, you can. Of course, you can guide and try to mold. But it's in there. It's absolutely in there.
Yeah.
And how much of it is genetic and is from your parents, I don't know. My mother is a very independent spirit for sure. And I do think I'm quite like her.
Right. Yes. So,
yeah, let's give her a bit of credit for the independent. wildness. I mean, I'll tell you what boarding school does. It's there's advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are I wouldn't have thought twice about getting on a plane to go anywhere by myself at the age of 17 when I left school.
Wow.
And I never thought twice about going anywhere alone, and in fact went many places alone, and I'm still very happy in my own company. I don't have to be in company. I think that comes from being in a boarding school.
Were you a good boarder?
Jesus, I was so innocent. It was beyond a joke. Beyond a joke. I don't think I even joined the world until I was in sixth year. I suddenly got to sixth year and went, what is this? What is this? What is this place that I am in? It was like I suddenly woke up
really?
And went, oh my God,
okay,
I have to get out of here.
Right.
Yeah, it happened overnight, like around Christmas time. I suddenly went, oh Jesus, no, I this has to end. I've got to get out into the world. But I honestly, I think I was in a bit of it.
So what, you're talking like 16, 17 probably?
Yeah.
That age.
16, about to hit 17, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Very sheltered, very hidden away, you know.
And was
really?
It, yeah, was it a Catholic, presume it was a Catholic boarding school?
Oh God, yeah. Up until fifth year, we were going to mass 7 mornings a week before breakfast.
Wow, 7 mornings, wow.
7 mornings. And like, that, doesn't that make me sound like a very old person? And I'm 54. Like I when I say that now, I think it makes me sound like I'm 70.
Yeah, I know
or,
what you mean.
Or more. It's so out there.
So when that kind of switch went off and you went, right, now, I want to go out there. I want to see what's out there. Was that it? You just packed your bag and kind of finished school and off you went? Or where, like, what happened right after school?
Well, unfortunately for me, I wanted to be an actress, but there was no clear path to do that. I knew I wanted to be an actress from when I was very young, really. But there was no gated schools or drama schools, like there are loads now, but they didn't exist then, and nobody seemed to be able to advise me as to how to go about this. So I repeated the leave and cert out of kind of what else will I do.
Yeah.
It was literally like that, and I think I applied to go to the College of Marketing, and
all right,
I went, and while I was there the Gaiety School started their first ever acting course, which was a 9-week course.
Yeah.
The very, very first one. I think it was 1987. And I applied for it. And they made quite a big deal of it because it was the first one and hundreds applied, apparently. Anyway, I got a place while I was in the College of Marketing and hopped on the bus from Mountjoy Square over to Bagot Street. And I was so penniless. I was so broke. I remember getting a bus from Mountjoy Square, and I wouldn't buy a ticket, so I would get on the bus, and if the conductor was downstairs, I would go up, and when he came up, I would go down, and when he would go down, I would go up, and I would do this until I got to Bagot Street and I'd hop off.
Oh, stop.
I mean, the madness.
Yeah,
of it.
The stress of it, I'd say.
The stress, that's right. I didn't give a damn. I was scallywag. Like, I didn't have the money, and I had to be there at a certain time. I didn't care. It was like, needs must.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like, you know?
So you got through, you did the course.
I did the 9-week course, which wasn't enough for me. If ever a kid needed training, it was me, because I had no discipline and I really did need to learn. So I guess that's a kind of a regret, because I think it would have made a big difference. I wouldn't have had to learn everything the hard way, I feel, if I had been to drama school for 2 years. I think it might have instilled a bit of professionalism in me, whereas I just didn't have any. I really had to learn that the hard way by not getting jobs and wondering why afterwards. But it was a beginning. It was a beginning. Joe Dowling was the man who was running the course, and he was doing a production of Boris Boy and the Gaiety, and we were asked if we wanted to be, you know, walk-ons, extras in it. And I was like, yes, 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 yes. So in I went as a little walk-on with one line, and that was the start of me.
Yeah,
you know, that got me. I was up and running, and so I was actually only 18 when I went straight into the acting business.
Yeah, wow.
Which I did for 10 straight years before I became a comic.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How did that come about?
It came about entirely by accident through Stephen, my husband, who I'm not sure was he was my husband at the time, but I think I was giving him a shot. anyway, he was asked, would he make a documentary about the Kilkenny Cat Laughs
Festival? Yeah.
And I was an unemployed actress, tearing my hair out, the usual, like all actors do, giving out yards. There's no work. What am I meant to do? Yada, yada, yada. And Steve was making the show and he said, well, why don't you come down with me as a dog's body, as a runner, be a runner. I'll give you, here's a laminate, make tea, run around. Yeah, yeah. So I said, okay, like a kind of bored teenager. And off I went. And it was literally a road to Damascus moment. I mean, I had never really seen any stand-up. I'd really seen so practically nothing live and very little on the television.
Yeah.
So to see this was just like my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe it. There was 40 comics and I had this laminate, which to me was like gold dust because I could just go in and out of different shows all the time. And I was just blown away by it.
So you always dreamed of being an actor and going into that world. But comedy wasn't necessarily something you thought of until this moment. But you were clearly naturally gas. Like people would have said you were funny.
You know, I mean, I don't think they would have said I was any funnier than anyone else. I mean, I don't think I was standout funny ever.
Or is that you saying that about yourself?
I think that's true. I mean, the girls at school are just like bewildered by this career.
Go away.
They're like, God, you were just for the birds. You were just an airhead, you know. I mean, I was funny in the sense that I used to get up and impersonate teachers. That's the one thing I did do. And I would get laughs. And I was always cast in as one of the leads in the school show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there was that. There was always that. But I was certainly not bringing the house down now, but I definitely wasn't. But I was, as an actor, I had been cast in quite a few comedic roles, for sure.
Yeah.
Because you could just do it. And so if you read for a funny part, it's just in you. You know, you can't, that's the one thing that you cannot learn and you cannot teach. You cannot teach something
comic timing.
Funny. It's just innate.
Yeah.
Right? It's just in there. Anyway, back to Kilkenny. If someone had said to me that I would become a stand-up comic, I wouldn't know what they were talking about. I wouldn't have really understood what it was, what it meant. Nothing. It wasn't even vaguely in my sights.
Wow.
Nor did I want it particularly. Even when I chased it, I didn't particularly want it. This is one of my big mistakes in life, that I didn't understand how valuable it was until relatively recently. I did it as almost as a filler. I thought, well, that'll fill a gap until I get my next acting job. So I sort of used it in a way. I didn't see it as I didn't put it on a par with my acting work.
Wow. Okay.
And that was very short-sighted of me.
I would imagine, as in terms of, because I found definitely as the years have gone on, I'm doing a lot more self-reflection than I ever would have done in my younger years. And then depending on what you do for a living, I suppose you're kind of forced into doing that. I would imagine what you do.
Oh, I've been doing it for years. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be getting by if I wasn't doing all of that. But I only started to do it. I probably picked up my first like self-help book. I remember Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I think I was probably well into my 20s. I might have been late 20s.
That's young.
Might have been 30.
Yeah.
I suppose. But when you look at the kids now, you know, they have just so much available to them in terms of mental health and guidance. I envy them that. Mm. I envy them that because we were just staggering around in the dark,
yeah,
not knowing what was going on, not knowing how to process things. We just didn't have a clue, you know. I feel like there's an awful lot out there to help them and support them if they want it.
Mm.
Even if you wanted to become a comic now, oh my God, you just go onto YouTube and watch everyone, hear everyone's opinion. You can learn so much just from going online. I had barely seen a comic until I went to Kilkenny. There was no such thing as the internet.
Yeah,
there was no very little live comedy. There was one room in Dublin, the International Bar upstairs. That was it. And it was a fledgling thing. The wonderful thing about stand-up is you can make it as a comic, I think, relatively quickly, because very good people stand out.
Okay.
And they do well fast because they stand out. And I made my way quickly. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't understand how well I was doing. I didn't get that for years. But, you know, you don't get asked to come back and you don't get given the spots unless you're doing well in the room.
Yeah.
So I was doing well. So I just got booked. And that was it.
So this new show, Demented, and as you said there, you're talking about this transition that you're in now with your daughter. You know, hormones are raging, and you know, we all know, well, we kind of forget, but we can bring ourselves back to the time when we were 16, 17 and things are changing. And then you're in this phase in your life in your early 50s where menopause is very real, and it's a rite of passage for all women. And yet, you know, back in the day, it was seen as, ah, sure, that's it now. You know, hang up your boots. Your time is over. And we know that's not the case.
So sad, isn't it?
So sad.
It's so sad. I feel terribly sorry for the generation, really, just before us.
Yeah.
You know what's really funny? There's a rush on HRT. You can't get it. It's really hard to get it.
Okay.
There's a rush. There's a run on it.
Yeah.
Literally. And I keep having this conversation every time I go down to the chemist, and I say, what's going on? What's the story? And they say, oh, sure, everyone's on it. Everyone's on it. And this is new. And I'm realizing that the only reason there's a run on HRT and that this is happening is because everybody is talking about it finally.
Yes, finally.
Women are finally actually talking about it without a sense of shame and mortification, and therefore, everybody's a bit more educated and going out and helping themselves,
yeah,
which is great. What we should have been doing for years.
Correct.
So it's amazing, right?
Oh, of course it is. Absolutely it is.
But I wouldn't have thought, you know, it's really funny because I never liked the word menopause. And people used to say, oh, that's not coming into my house. I'm not having that. I'm not going to be engaging in that. And I probably would have spoken like that and thought, yeah, no, I won't be engaging with that. It's a bit like age, you know, the way you used to think, oh, I'm not going to declare that I'm 50. I'm not going to declare that I'm 60. I'm going to try and hide all that. And then that all just becomes extremely boring and high maintenance to do that. And I get very bored of any kind of pretense very quickly. So I'd be announcing I'm going to be 50 3 years before I'm 50, or even calling myself 50 long before I was. I'd be like, oh, what age you know? Oh, I don't know. Could be 60. So here's 60. Like I've just kind of given up.
Yeah.
I don't care. It bores the arse off me.
Yeah.
And I was the same with the whole menopause thing. I was like, oh, here it is. I'm a basket case. And really all I can see ultimately is the funny side. And I really wanted to write about it I thought there was an awful lot to say from the funny point of view.
Yeah.
There's far too much almost talking about it like it's cancer in whispered tones. I'm like, seriously, that's got to stop.
It almost
seems quaint to me that it's a thing, that it's still a thing, that it's still a taboo thing. It's like, wow, really? How is this possible? This is 2022, is it? You know, are we really, is this still, do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. I mean, I've had many a conversation with people about it. I'm fully aware that it's around the corner for me. I feel actually, obviously, it'll be different.
I'll tell you, I'm the oracle. I'll tell you anything you need to know.
I'll be calling on you.
I'm the oracle. I've done it all. I've researched it all. I talk about it on stage.
Yeah.
Very funny. All the different things I've taken and tried and all that.
Well, can I ask, is it a recent thing? Is it the last few years it really kicked in? Or, because I know people who, you know, late 30s start to feel the perimenopausal symptoms like rocking in. And I don't want to dwell on it. I suppose I just want to get a sense of where you're at. Because what I want to actually say was, look at what you're doing now. Look at the kind of work you're doing now. Look at the gigs you're getting. Do you know what I mean? It's not the case of, oh yeah, when a woman hits a certain age, that's it. She's done. She might as well just go home and bake scones. Do you know what I mean? You're doing brilliant, really interesting work, very cool stuff. And you're, I think people are seeing you in a different light all the time. You're very successful now at a phase in your life when back in the day, that would not have been the norm. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do know. I mean, there was always a fear that as you got older, you know, as an actress, you were going to be cast. I mean, if I was still being an actor now, I would most certainly, I wouldn't be playing the mother roles. I'd be playing the grandmother roles.
Do you think?
That's, oh, 100%.
Really?
100%. Yeah, well, most definitely, because that is the way on film. Yeah. I mean, okay. Even in Moon Boy, you know, I was the mother, but I mean, I had a grandchild, you know.
My eldest, you did.
My eldest daughter had a child and I was very young.
Yeah.
You know, I was only coming up for 40 then. So that's the way it is, I'm telling you.
Yeah, okay.
You're always playing older. Always, because you're never young enough. I think that's probably what I love about the stand-up. It's so independent. And nothing matters other than the writing. It all just comes down to you and the jokes and how good they are.
Yeah.
You know, nobody has a say, really, in how well you do at it, apart from the audience. But really, it all rests with you. And I'm so grateful for it. I'm like, if I had to depend on being hired as an actor or a broadcaster or a presenter, if I had to depend on that, I think I would lose the plot.
Mm.
I think I would lose the plot because I think it does something terrible to you psychologically. That I think it's other people having a control over your career. I've been there, you know, I've done that. I've been an actor.
Yeah.
I've done all of those rejections and been close to a job and close to a job and close to a job and not gotten them. And I've been there 100 times, 10 times over. And the same with television work, waiting to hear, are you going to get a commission? Are you going to get another series? Oh, geez, I just couldn't do that anymore. So
you took the control
back. The stand-up is control. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it's a real gift because, you know, I still want to do those other things.
Yeah.
But I'm not utterly dependent on them. I suppose that's the thing. It's like, I guess that's what's so good about the podcasting world too.
Yeah.
That has given a lot of people independence from broadcasters,
definitely.
Something that I think really needed to happen. It's helped to break a lot of comics as well. It was extremely difficult to get a break as a comic. You had to get on the telly or work the roads for years to build up your name. It was very hard. So the podcasting is fascinating, isn't it?
It is. I love it.
Switching up the industry in lots of different ways.
Big time. And another example, I suppose, where you did take the power back, or you were leading it, was when you and your husband decided to make the movie about Christina Noble.
Yeah. I mean, the Christina story, Noble, is very special. There's the odd thing in there are defining moments in your life, I think. One of them being my arriving in Kilkenny to see stand up for the first time and having a moment of what is this, a moment of revelation. And Christina was certainly another defining moment. Steve you know, actors give out a lot about looking for work and not being cast. It just, it goes with the territory. It's such a frustrating, job. Yeah. But so, you know, we moan a lot. So Steve is a filmmaker and a writer. And so he can't be listened to at that moment. He's like, well, just do it yourself. Write something for yourself. I was like, I'm not a writer. That's not what I do. He thinks everybody can write. It's very annoying. I'm like, we don't all have that talent, love. That's not, everybody has that. I'm a good talker. You know what I mean? I'm not necessarily good at writing the shit down. Anyway, he wasn't having any of it. He was like, just find a bloody project for yourself and stop moaning. Start researching. Find a woman. Find an historical figure. Somebody that you would like to make a film about and just bloody do it. Anyway, this became a little bugbear between us because every now and again he would ask me months later, well, have you found anything?
Okay.
Like, no, I haven't. No, I haven't. Stop asking me. And, you know, and I did actually research all kinds of everyone from Countess Markovitch right the way through. And would this be interesting? Is that interesting? Is this interesting? Is she interesting? And I just thought, well, that's all too expensive. Period films and yada yada. And it won't go anywhere. And right. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, for whatever reason, I had read Christina's books when I was in my 20s as a young one. And she used to pop up every now and then, the Late Late Show and this show and the other show. And anyone who read Christina's books, this was not unique to me. Sure. Anyone who read about her was dumbfounded by what she had come through, what she had, the life that she had lived, which everyone, you know now knows is extreme poverty in Ireland, and a gang rape and a child given up for adoption and a domestic abuse and you name it. She had it thrown at her and still stands. She is extraordinary. But anyway, it was what she went on to achieve, you know, saving literally hundreds of thousands of children's lives in Vietnam, that I just thought, this woman is just, this is off the scale. I just was fascinated by her. So anyway, when I would see her and I would think, I think that my thought was, I'm just really meant to be doing something with this woman. I didn't know whether it was meant to volunteer or go to Vietnam, but I just knew that she was going to cross my path.
Okay, somehow, well.
That there was something, but I didn't know it was that. It never occurred to me that it would be a film or anything like it. But, you know, on my 40th birthday, I was pregnant with Daniel, and Steve said, what do you want? We were living in London. I said, I just want a nice lunch. Just take me out for a nice lunch. And we were going to have a party, and I was probably about 5 months pregnant. I said, maybe come shop with me for something to wear that will just look half decent at this party. So that's what I want. So we sat down at the lunch and Steve said, he hadn't said it to me for ages, and he just said, so what's this film idea? What's it going to be?
Right.
Honest to God, at this stage, I wanted to throttle because we had really almost come to blows. But it out of my mouth, without any thought whatsoever, I just said, there's only one person that I want to make a film about, and that's Christina Noble.
Mm.
And that wasn't a thought I'd had. I hadn't formulated that as a thought. It just came out of my mouth. I don't know how do these things happen? Mm. You know, it's just, but I was no sooner out of my mouth than I could barely finish the lunch. I was like, I need to go now because I want to find out immediately if the rights to her books have been acquired already by somebody. And I was on, like, I mean, when I went home, I was online. I was trying to find out that day about the book and the rights. And the rights had been bought by other people and had been acquired by other people.
Right.
And it took us 2 years to get them.
Okay.
And that's why the Noble story was in our lives 4 or 5 years. It took 2 years to get the rights.
Mm.
And within that time, Steve started writing the screenplay and, you know, we started.
So you were confident you were going to get them? You're going to get the rights at this stage.
At that stage, I am an eternal optimist, ultimately. And, you know, Steve was a filmmaker, so he was much more practical and trying to rein me in and a kind of a, listen, this is not easy. This is not an easy gig. And getting to play her would be the biggest challenge because obviously I am not a star. And even if I am known in Ireland, that counts for nothing. In terms of making a film, you wouldn't be able to open a feckin' supermarket in terms of what your name could lend to a production. It just doesn't count. You know, you're not on the list. You're not on a list of people who can bring finance.
Okay.
Okay.
So that was going to be an enormous challenge.
Because initially when you said that I'm not a star, I felt like I wanted to defend you saying that. Because do you know what I mean? Because I suppose to us here, you are. But I get what you're trying to say when you're trying to pitch it out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in terms of making movies.
Right.
Unless you're going to make a very independent small film, you're not going to get any finance on the back of somebody that is not a name. And you'd be surprised by the number of people who do not qualify as a name. You'd be surprised.
Really?
Because unless they're up there, you know, with the Saoirse Ronans, you're just, forget about it.
Okay, okay.
So that was the situation. So he was trying to make me keep it real. And I was being Mrs. I can and I will.
Fair play to you, yeah.
I do have, I think when I get obsessed by a thing, I kind of don't drop it. I that's changing, unfortunately, with time. Although, well, we'll see. I don't know. It's still in there, I think. I'm just a bit more practical, probably. But the story of how we raised the money and how it all happened is really epic, and I should write about it sometime, because it's an amazing thing that happened. But
yes.
Anyway, that was my 40th birthday, and off we went, and we, as you know, the story ended up with us making the movie, and it took
and it was fabulous.
It took up 5 years of our lives, so yeah, it was hugely important, and It was a special thing to do.
So I would say it's an obvious one. That's a major career highlight of yours.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
For sure.
So is acting, because at one point you kind of spoke about acting in the past tense. Is it in the past?
No. It's not. Now, if there's no offers on the table, there's nobody saying, will you come and do this? But I kind of think they will. I expect it to come back to me.
Good.
Relatively soon, because it's been a gap, and that's how it goes. That's how it goes with acting. It seems to ebb and flow in years. So I'm kind of expecting somebody to come to me with something soon.
Good.
I could be wrong, but
are you going to manifest? You're going to manifest that. Sounds like you're somebody who does.
I think I will. Yeah. I think I'd like to. Do you know what? When I was in New York, I went to see Billy Crystal in Mr. Saturday Night, and he's 74 years old. And to see him hopping around the stage like a young thing.
A class.
I adore him. You know, I absolutely adore him. But he's a comic.
I didn't know he's
an actor.
He's
hosted
shows.
The Oscars 9 times. And there he was skipping on a Broadway stage. Being brilliant, being absolutely brilliant. And I was very inspired. I thought, wow, he's 20 years older than me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's just keep going.
Love it.
Let's just keep doing it. Let's keep doing it. Who would retire? Who would retire? What is that about? What would you do with yourself?
Do you never see a day when you'll pack it in? Never.
No.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, unless it packs me up, then you don't have a choice. But I've tried doing nothing, and I don't do well. I don't flourish when I don't have things to do.
Yes.
A bit of excitement. Showbiz excitement.
Yeah.
I actually need that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get too bored.
Well, it seems like you're in a very creative phase at the moment. Do you think things are just going to go up and up from where you're at now?
I just don't know. You know, every time I write a show, I think I don't have another one in me. I swear to God, it takes so much to write 80 minutes of material. Like, it's just epic. And even now I go on the stage and I love this show. I think it's the best one I've written.
Okay.
I think I've gotten better as a comic. That's one of the great beauties of getting older. You don't get worse. You don't get worse as an actor, you get better. You don't get worse as a comic, you get better. You get better at all of it. You get better at presenting, you get better at talking. So that's a great plus.
Yeah.
The only thing that doesn't get better is your face. Your face starts to fall into the sea. But what can you do? Throw a bit of money at it and hope for the best, you know, which is what I'm doing. Please let my face give me 10 more years. Like that.
Well, look,
I don't know if things are going to keep going up, but I want them to. I want them to. I quite like the idea. I kind of think it will keep me young maybe as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the stand up will keep me young, give me a bit of edge, and just not let me slip too gently into middle old age. And on a good day, I feel like a young one and I think I'm fabulous.
Yeah.
And on a bad day, I feel ancient.
Yeah, okay.
So is that not how it is for all of us?
Yeah, it is, of course. It is, of course.
Depending on a good day, a bad
yeah.
day. I mean, your kids will make you feel like the most irrelevant thing on the planet.
Yeah.
They just think you're an absolute dose. They just think, what do you know? They're looking at you like, what do you actually know? You know, it's just hilarious.
So do they not think that you're hilarious. Cool? Because you're a pretty cool mom to me, like.
I like, that's what I try
yeah,
to
yeah,
tell
yeah,
them.
Yeah,
Excuse me. Do you understand what's happening here? Even when I get them tickets for things, I say, thank you very much. I got you that because I'm connected to that person.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can thank me for
yeah.
that. Yeah, do you understand? It's because I'm cool because I know that person and I can ask them for a favor. Do you understand? I'm spelling it out and they're still going, really? Really? I don't think so.
Oh, come here, Deirdre. Thanks a million. I've loved the chat, and I know you probably have to leg it now and do drop offs and collections and all that crack. But and we didn't even get to scratch the surface. There was so much more I could have spoken to you about, but all the different gigs you've done. But it was lovely to hear you speak about how Noble came about. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to seeing what you do next. Best luck with the tour. By the way, if anyone wants to get tickets, just go to your website, isn't that it?
DeirdreO'Kane.net. That's where all the tickets are on sale, and I'm pretty much all over the country.
Great stuff. Thanks a million. Really appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please follow, rate and review in all the usual places. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.